We're back here to the Neil Haley Show in the Total Celebrity segment, Caregiver Dave Celebrity segment. I'm excited to welcome to the program Caregiver Dave Nassani. Dave, how are you? And this guest, I'm telling you, this is something we need. We need to stop thinking about a lot of things in reality and start to live a life of virtue. And I'm really excited about our guest today.
Joe Drake. Joe has been writing about the intersection of sports, culture, money, since coming to the New York Times in 98. He's also pursued these lines of reporting as a book author, most recently in the Times bestseller, American Pharoah, The Untold Story of the Triple Crown Champion's Legendary Rise, and Our Boy, Perfect Season on the Plains with the Smith Center Redmond. How you doing, Joe? Welcome to the show.
Guys, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And Joe's latest book, The Saint Makers, Inside the Catholic Church and How a War Hero Inspired a Journey of Faith. Joe, again, that's why we have you on. I'm going to let Dave ask the first question, but I'm excited to learn about this topic and especially this book. Go ahead, Dave.
Joe, great job at the New York Times there. How did you get there?
How did I get to the Times? Was luck and hard work, I think. That's the best answer I can do. You know, I came up from the Southern Circuit. I worked at the Dallas Morning News, started at Night Cops from 6 to 2:30 in the morning for $6 an hour, parlayed that into a job on the national desk at the Atlanta Constitution. And, you know, the real kind of crossover of the Times, I started on the news side, but I always had an interest in sports. And I wrote a book about the Charlotte Hornets' first season in the NBA. And it was it's really a bad book, so tell your listeners don't need to go out and get it. But it was the Atlanta was about ready to have the 96 Olympics, so they needed a news guy who knew sports. So I switched over to sports, and that's eventually what got me noticed. It was a big platform. You know, I got to travel the world and do a lot of different sort of projects, and everywhere from the fall of the Soviet Union to Africa. And it was just luck. That's the luck, and the hard work got me in that position.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Right place, right time, Joe. And that's where that experience of the New York Times must have taught you a lot about journalism and about people, didn't it?
Yeah, it does, guys. And you know what it's like. And I'm a sports writer now, so I'll put it in terms. I mean, I've had worked with great journalists and editors at every stop I've been. But when you're at a place like the New York Times, it's like playing on the Lakers. I mean, everybody's a superstar, and you kind of you pinch yourself, and everybody's there to make it better, to make what you do better, to make your situation better. So, you know, we put a lot of time and effort into our journalism. You know, we got hundreds of bureaus all over the world. We've got men and women who write one story a year or investigate Donald Trump's taxes for 3 years. So, you know, it's quite a privilege to work there.
Yeah. So tell us about your latest book. Why did you write?
Yeah, the book is The Saint Makers. And what happened is all my previous efforts had been in sports. And actually, sports led me to this. I was living in Kansas, a small town, with my family, writing about the Smith Center Redmen, who had won 70 games in a row and were the anti-Friday Night Lights. They basically never talked about winning or losing. And through them and through the neighbors and the friends I made down there, I heard about this extraordinary priest named Father Emil Capon. And Father Capon was from the region. He was very much of the people there. He was a son of a farmer, a doer, not a talker. And he had found his calling as a military chaplain. In fact, he's the most decorated military chaplain in American history. And he was in World War II, got the Bronze Star, but where he really, his legend grew was in the Korean War. He was the chaplain there, and he's credited with saving hundreds on the battlefield, and he never even carried a weapon. He basically would never let the wounded behind. And he'd be going all across these battlefields, loading his Jeep up. And then he got captured along with, you know, 700 other troops. And Korea was a brutal war that, you know, people forget about because it was on the heels of World War II. And everybody was sort of warred out. And, you know, he led a march carrying a wounded soldier 60 miles for weeks in the brutal conditions, snow, sub-zero temperatures. And his example from that minute he got captured carrying him lifted the whole fellow prisoners he had. So he built this esprit de corps during captivity. He did what it took to keep people alive. He stole food from the guards. He was a farm guy, so he could build things. He built tools, you know, fashioned and architected latrines, did blankets, made blankets. He traded tobacco for all kinds of things. Really a resourceful guy. And he's credited with keeping thousands alive during this. So, you know, I had this great story that I'd heard about, and I was interested in him. And at the same time, they were trying to make him a saint. And I was Catholic educated, parochial and Jesuit, and even I didn't know what how you made a saint.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that set me off on this journey from the plains of Kansas to the halls of the Vatican. And, you know, I discovered it's a old, expensive and time-consuming ritual.
Expensive for who?
Well, it's expensive for the people paying for his cause. The diocesans of Wichita, Kansas, and southeast Kansas, they've already got $600,000 into Father Capon's effort. There's some causes that cost more than $1 million.
And that's
a money-making effort for the Catholic Church on top of everything else.
Oh, yeah, it is. And, you know, what has happened and what I discovered in the reporting is Pope John Paul II saw saint-making as a underused marketing tool for the Catholic Church. I mean, really, if you think about it, they're the church's superheroes.
Yes.
They're people that, you know, we can look up to and say, I want to imitate his life. And that, to me, the most important thing, and it's what attracted me to Father Capon, is they got to be relatable. They got to have a little bit of me and you in them. So we want to. Yeah,
exactly.
That,
you know. Everyday saints. That's what you're talking about, Joe. And an everyday saint that basically, you know, is able to go do their livelihood, be part of the people, do their work, but yet at the end of the day, have faith and do the right thing.
Yes. And, you know, and this is what I found with Father Capon. I mean, he wasn't flashy, but what he was is he knew brave. He was courageous. He was of service to others. He saw the goodness in others. In fact, some of the most powerful testimonies from his fellow prisoners comes from Turkish soldiers who were Muslim and Jewish soldiers, American soldiers. In fact, when the Korean War prisoners were finally released in camp number 5 where he was, he had been dead 2 years. And the guy who led the prisoners out was a Jewish fighter pilot who got captured after he died and never even knew him. But he had spent months building a crucifix with the likeness of Father Capon on him and marched the whole camp out behind him and said, you know, this was a man who had a will of steel and a soul of velvet. So, you know, that's what he was able to do, how he could move people.
Wow. Sounds like a great guy. Yeah, very similar to the, I'm here in L.A., the Hollywood Walk of Fame, you know, to get a star in Hollywood, it's the same process. You know, you put up some money and everybody votes. And I was wondering, you know, great people like in Calcutta, what's her name? Mother Teresa.
Right. And Mother Teresa set the record. The average time between a candidate's death and being canonized is 181 years. And because you're out in L.A., you appreciate this. She was a true celebrity. She was the Oprah of faith. And so she got in 5 years, the fastest anybody's ever been sainted.
Yeah. Wow. And that process.
Is she like the second fastest then?
No, John Paul II, who basically pioneered the system, he was the second fastest at 9 years.
And you're seeing a lot more now, Joe, that are 30, 40 years after their death to be.
Yeah, the whole process is evolving, guys. I mean, you know, in the beginning, there are saints, some of the most famous saints really didn't even exist. Saint Christopher is my confirmation name, patron saint of travel. But in fact, he was a giant of myth who lived next to a river and carried people back and forth. And his legend, the legend is he carried a little boy, 3-year-old, struggled. It was the hardest crossing he ever had. When he collapses on the other bank, the little boy says, you know, I'm Christ. You've carried the heaven, the earth, and my kingdom. That's why it was so hard. So, you know, in the beginning, you could just voice vote people into sainthood. So they did take it back and make it more formal. And they introduced this whole concept of you had to have miracles, 4 of them in the beginning. John Paul II, he took that down to 2 miracles, and in some cases 1 miracle. So, you know, he did 482 saints, which is more than all his previous guys, the 6 previous popes ahead of him.
Well, I'm curious, is St. Nicholas on the list?
St. Nicholas is on the list, and he actually does exist. There is a St. Nicholas. Now, he isn't the guy who flies around on Christmas Eve.
There is a Santa Claus.
That just developed in the process of that, of the thought process. But also, the history of St. Nicholas in a certain way, as a saint, Joe, led to Santa Claus, right? For sure.
Yes.
In the development to where it is today. All right, now let's Dave, go with your next question, please.
I was just wondering what do you hope for this book? What do you hope to accomplish? Just getting the information out there, or do you have other goals?
No, you know, this is my 7th book, and you know, you do these things realistically. I did it because I was interested and curious, and I thought I could learn something. I learned a great deal, probably most importantly, about, you know, where my faith was and how I could make it more robust. But, you know, put it out there in the world. And, you know, I've had books that have been bestsellers. I've had books that have not been bestsellers. With this, I certainly didn't write this to come out in the middle of a pandemic, but it's really appropriate. This was a guy who faced down the most dire of situations, brutality in a divided world, and he did it gracefully and with dignity. And, you know, I think that's a good example for people to have. And, you know, you could read this and feel good about the world, that there are people who are trying to make it a better place. And, you know, I just kind of want people to read it, make up their own minds. I mean, I'm certainly not saved. I'm still a sinner, guys. You know, I very much is that. But, you know, you research somebody who is so good, and you realize just how hard it is.
Oh, my goodness. And, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I fail at being somewhat good probably 6 out of 7 days a week. But now at least have the consciousness to know you got to put the effort in to try to be good.
Exactly.
If that's being a good husband, a father, a neighbor, a colleague, you know, if you're just more aware of it, it helps.
It's a challenge.
It's making you a better Catholic. And are you getting a lot of support from the Catholic Church? I'm assuming you are.
You know, I am a bit, but I'm pretty clear there of, you know, I'm a Catholic, but there's things that the Church and I don't agree on, and that's fine. Sure. And so, you know, Catholic readers, absolutely. But, you know, the Church is not out there. They haven't invited me to the Vatican.
No, and that's because it's specifically on different things. But I think what you're bringing to light is how difficult it is to be a saint, to be canonized, or even be considered a saint, right? What kind of lay out some of those craziness things that, I mean, not craziness, but things that you and I, Joe, have a challenge every day to live, to try to become a saint.
Oh, yeah. No, and, you know, it's not only being good, it's being at the right place at the right time a lot. I mean, you know, for example, his cause is moving a little slower because he's a priest, an American priest. The rest of the world blames the sexual abuse scandal on the American priest. He's a soldier. The rest of the world doesn't really appreciate American military and how we use it. And then, you know, on the flip side, there's a 15-year-old boy who just got beatified, which is put you on the doorstep of sainthood. He died in 2006. He was Italian. He was known as a computer genius. His skill was hunting down miracles on the internet. And he has already passed there in a mere 13 years, because it's good for the church to have a tech-savvy millennial saint. I mean, that's good business.
It's good, marketing. It's good marketing, for sure. Right. And, interesting. All right. Well, Dave, go ahead and your next question.
No, I disagree with. I agree with what you said about war. You had a Georgia senator saying you cannot serve God in the military or something like that. I don't know where you got that from. But what other kind of support is this coming from? Where's the bulk of the money coming from? So,
you know, the bulk's coming from people like me and you of that region. Pancake mm-hmm. breakfast, an extra collection in the various churches. Uh-huh. The diocesan has put some money up. They kind of got it rolling. And, you know, you can go to the Father Capon Guild and you could buy medals that look like his, tchotchkes, refrigerator magnets. I mean, it's coming from people like you and I who have a belief in this guy and are willing to put a few bucks up.
What's the amount that it looks like it's going to end up being?
I think it'll be north of a million. Once it gets through, and the deal is where that expense is, you need canon lawyers, and all of us have dealt with a lawyer. Most of us have dealt with a lawyer at some time, and those billable hours, especially when you average is 181 years, they can go pretty high.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's for sure. Now, Dave has a final question for you, and it involves caregiving. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, so I'm a caregiver. I owned a gas station, but 22 years ago, my wife had a headache that just turned our lives upside down. You know, she lost her speech, became paralyzed on one side. And so the grief period was pretty hard for us. And now we reinvented ourselves. Our love was rekindled. And now I go around just helping caregivers stay alive, because I say, if you're not a caregiver, just wait. You're either going to become one or you're going to need one. And 30% of them actually die before their loved ones do, just from the stress. So I started CaregiverDave.com. I've spoken on 35 TV shows so far. I've spoken at Harvard and NASDAQ and Carnegie Hall with Suzanne Summers and Martha Stewart, Ice-T. I mean, it's just incredible the support I'm getting to support caregivers. And it'd be nice if our government can add that into their next, medical bill that it gives caregivers respite so that they can not die. My question to you is, how has it affected your life, caregiving?
Oh, you know, caregiving, and especially you and I sound like we're close to the same age. I mean, I have family. I have in-laws that are in similar situations that you've had. I mean, my parents died when I was very young, and you know, that's tragic enough. But at the same time, you see parents, you know, kids taking care of their parents. Now, I'm a late in life father. I have a 15-year-old, and, you know, you don't want to put the stress on him. I mean, it's a dilemma on all sides. So caregiving, and, you know, Father Capon is a great example of a caregiver. You know, he basically did whatever it takes to keep people alive. And, you know, he was blessed with the grace and the Holy Spirit enough to withstand that. But yeah, I see folks just worn down by it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's fantastic. And I guess we'll have to definitely, people need to learn more about Father for sure. But Joe, best place we can connect and purchase your book and learn more about you. Where can we go?
Well, you know, in this day and age, if you get a local bookstore, the Saint Makers, go get it from them. It's available on Amazon and in Barnes and Noble. You know, it's out there. If you're so inclined, go grab it.
Any website for you, for your books and stuff?
No website for me. I'm on Twitter at Joe Drape, just my name. And, you know, you can read me in the Times on all kinds of other things as well.
So you're writing sports all the time, Joe. That's your pretty much.
Yes.
What about
doing it from home?
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. I've been social distancing for 30 years. I mean, sports writers are never in the office or either on the road or at home writing on my kitchen table. This has been startling to have my son and my wife home with me. So, a new thing.
Yeah. And you'll see if you'll have to travel again, the way things are changing. Who knows? You know,
no, I know, and I've ventured out a couple times. I've been to Green Bay. I've been to the Kentucky Derby. And, you know, you do miss something by not being there in person. There's no doubt about it. You know, technology, you guys know it. You were talking about Zooms.
Yeah.
I mean, Zooms only give you too much, only give you so much of a feeling. You know, I can't wait to meet somebody for a drink or a lunch or go to a game and go to a locker room. And, you know,
when's that going to happen, Joe?
You know, I just did a series on this, and you know, it's not happening this year. And when it comes back full time, it's not going to come back as we knew it before. I mean, who wants to go sit in a 70,000 seat stadium with people again?
Interesting. That's it's going to be hard, and then you have to have a vaccine and everything. It's going to be interesting that how they pick the team, the people for the. I had someone on my other show regarding security, and he was involved in this whole security thing with the arenas and stadiums, and he flat out said that the ones that were picked to go to the Buffalo Bills game had to have a test, a COVID test, within the last 14 days to be chosen to be part of the playoff game. All right, give us predictions. Who's winning the Super Bowl, Joe?
The Kansas City Chiefs, man. And, you know, that's I'm a Kansas City native, and I'll tell you, the last good time I had was I took my son to the Super Bowl.
That must have been so much fun. All right, well, I'm hoping the Steelers will face Kansas City in the AFC Championship game. And luckily, we won't have that many fans in Kansas City, so there might be a shot. It's all depending on what happens if they get COVID from the Browns this week on Sunday night. So I appreciate you coming by, Joe. We'll see.
All right. Good luck.
All right, take care.
See you guys.
All right, see you again. All right, bye-bye. You listen to the Neil Haley Show. We'll be back in just a moment.